Hello, and thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast.
Canyonlands in the Utah desert out in the southwest of the United States. It was a really cool trip to go on, and this photograph shows this area just outside of Canyonlands National Park in, I guess, in southern Utah as you get south of Moab. And down on the east side of Canyonlands National Park. But this was cool. As we came into the entrance, there was a handful of dispersed campsites that sort of ran off into the, sort of a desolate area out there, really. I mean, if you look at it, it's interesting contoured landscape that you see of these, the sandstone and these sandstone mounds that kind of come up all around where we were while we were camping. And we were surrounded by other folks, too, that were a little further off. But this was remote, dispersed camping. And so we came down to the edge of this this wall of rock. And in this photo, I walked around kind of farther to the other side where you could see the car. And then this drop-off of rock as the fast-setting sun pulls up those shadows higher and higher into the rocks in the background just before the end of the day where there's no more light left over that area. But it was a great spot to camp, and it was really cool. There's so many wild places out there, especially outside of those national parks areas. So it was really cool, and it was really fun to get to be out there. I think this is from 2011.
You can see more of my work at billynewmanphoto.com. You can check out some of my photo books on Amazon. I think you can look up Billy Newman under the authors section there and see some of the photo books on film, on the desert, on surrealism, on camping. Some cool stuff over there.
This image that was a quick screenshot or a quick capture that we made around the campsite near Lone Pine, California in the Alabama Hills. And it was a really cool campsite. I think we stayed there for about 4 to 6 days or so in November and December of 2012. Really cool time of year to be out there. And we were fortunate, I think, east of the Sierra Nevadas, we had that rain shadow so that it was just a lot drier on that east side of California than it was on that coastal side of the Sierra Nevadas when we were there a few weeks before that. But a cool thing about this campsite, if you guys were to bother to look it up, it actually matches the Brumhilda scene from Django Unchained, if you were to watch that. We found that out, I think, right after we had camped here at the spot. Then we had watched the movie Django just a few months later, and we were like, whoa, wait a second. We had just been to that spot, that exact spot right there, right where this picture was taken. I think there's a scene where it shows, like, Jamie Foxx sitting over on the rock that is currently the kitchen table in this scene. But, yeah, it was kind of interesting. I think the shot was set up a little different, but it was really cool to see, and you're like, wow. That's right where we used to be. Interesting when you find out a spot that you were where something else was filmed. And it seems like a remote kind of campsite like this. But I'm sure over the years, thousands of people have been there.
You can check out more information at billynewmanphoto.com. You can go to billynewmanphoto.com/support if you want to help me out and participate in the value for value model that we're running this podcast with. If you receive some value out of some of the stuff that I was talking about, you're welcome to help me out and send some value my way through the portal at billynewmanphoto.com/support. You can also find more information there about Patreon and the way that I use it if you're interested or feel more comfortable using Patreon. That's patreon.com/billynewmanphoto. But some of the stuff is going up on Instagram. It's a photograph of the Alvord Desert. It was one that I was working on in Luminar, and that was from a raw file that I had from the A7R when we were out in the desert, out in the Alvord back in September. And there's like a couple of photos from there that I've been trying to work on a bit more, but through this software called Luminar that I was telling you about. It's like Luminar 2018. It's this update to some software that's been around for a long time. And it's a couple of years. It's a newer software, and it's definitely got like that modern Mac OS interface system, kind of like the, you know, how I was showing you some of the stuff in the new Final Cut, how there's some of those button interfaces.
Yeah, it looked really similar in the layout.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's similar in it, and just sort of the way that it operates and hides certain features. But it was kind of interesting. It's a lot like the Lightroom system, like in Lightroom right now, how we have the develop module. It's really a lot of the features that we'd see in the develop module, but really not the type of categorization system that we'd have in the library module of Lightroom. And that's, I think, some of the stuff that Luminar is really lacking in right now. Where Luminar really does succeed is like a lot of the options in photo editing and like kind of specific or sort of unique editing filters that you can add to the develop module on the side for some of the adjustments that you can make, like just some of the ways you can add luminance or brightness or soft glow or just different pieces like that. The software is kind of able to provide a lot of different ways to add adjustments and stuff to the photographs. And there's been some really interesting stuff that I've been trying to make, or, you know, like kind of coming up with different edits of some of the old photographs that we had just kind of gone through in Lightroom.
That's cool. You've been checking it out. I haven't spent any time in it yet. You're doing is it like a 14-day trial?
Yeah, I picked up, from the website, you can go and get a 14-day trial for the software. I think in the Mac App Store, you don't really see an option for that, but I think you see just for sale. I think it's like $59.99 or $69.99. There's probably a sale going on for Cyber Monday or Black Friday. But it's been interesting software, and it's been cool to use. I've been kind of curious to see what other things besides Lightroom are going to pop up. And so we see like Affinity Photo, we see Luminar, we see Pixelmator, there's Capture One, and there's a few other kind of pro options out there. A lot of them though, outside of Capture One, a lot of them are lacking like the content management or the digital asset management side of it.
Right. I can't remember if it was Luminar or a different one that you had shown me, but yeah, it seemed more like Photoshop almost, where you take the file in and you process the file, but it doesn't store your set of photos that you're working on.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't seem like it was for batch editing or, like taking a thing, kind of like how there's a little bit of batch editing stuff, but it still seems clumsy in comparison to the tool set and workflow that you have in Lightroom. So really it seems like you would still need Lightroom in some capacity to sort of organize some of your photographs in a way, at least like right now.
Lightroom is really great for that.
Yeah.
Of what there is right now.
For the version that I have right now, I'm still way, way, way happy with the workflow that I have for the time being. So I have no need to like upgrade to the Creative Cloud version. That's the current one that's causing problems. Yeah. So I'm happy to keep the old version of Lightroom. And then in some capacity, like update some of my raw processing stuff out on the outside of that to Luminar, where I get to kind of take advantage of some of the more modern processing techniques that are available in something like Luminar or something like Pixelmator or something like Affinity, like some just the different preset packages and mess around with some of the new creative stuff that's kind of new and modern for photography in 2018, as it's going to be. It's cool to be able to test that out. But it's also nice to really be able to keep Lightroom around in the background.
Yeah.
And just have that there to organize stuff. Like even just like what I was talking about of like this big project I had of kind of trusting it to transfer 600 gigabytes of photographs through the computer and then onto a second hard drive and then categorize those under a file name by day, date, and year. I just wouldn't really trust like software like Luminar to do that. It's not capable of anything like that, like you were talking about. It can just take one graphic file in at a time, process it, and then save that out as a graphic file. But it's not even like that same kind of non-destructive system where you work on it for a while and then you just leave the program and it's saved. Those edits, those adjustments to the photograph are saved non-destructively to the file. It's still non-destructive editing, but you have to save it as like a project file. So like ultimately, instead of like just a single catalog where you would go through a lot of images, if you were working in Luminar more exclusively, you would have a folder of your photographs or photo projects, let's say, and you would have a photo, like a Photoshop file, but a Luminar file that was the image with the adjustments set aside to it. It's a really big file too. It's like with these like 45, 50 megabyte A7R photos, it's like a 70 megabyte file.
That's huge.
It's huge. Yeah. Yeah. So my poor little 100 gigabyte hard drive is choking. So it's, I don't know. It's okay. But the Luminar stuff, it's been cool to work with. I'm going to try and do some screen capture stuff with it. And with that, just kind of thinking about doing screen capture stuff, it's been making me think about screen capture stuff and trying to figure out how to do it. And I didn't really know how to do screen capture work before. And I've pretty quickly, I just figured out, like, from people, you know, everywhere saying it, that you can just use QuickTime, the QuickTime player on the Mac, to do that. And it works really well. Like, I pulled up QuickTime, and then you go, like, File, Start New Screen Capture, and then you click on the monitor that you want to start recording, and you can kind of set some commands around if it's going to show the mouse click or mouse capture at all. And so it was able to do that. I don't know. I was able to practice a couple times and make some screen captures. And I want to try and transition that over to some of the stuff that we were talking about, of like similar to this right now, like record audio like we're doing in the podcast, but then run a screen capture on the background while we're working in something like Luminar, while we're going through one of the photographs that we have from, you know, some place that we were at. And then we can show some of the adjustments and some of the ways of working in Luminar and making adjustments and then saving a file out. And then we can put that up as content on YouTube or, you know, other than, yeah, YouTube. That's where I went. Facebook or something too. You know, they take videos.
Yeah, that's really so cool that you figured out the screen capture stuff. That's awesome. That's so easy.
Yeah, you know, it will be easy for us.
Or at least this kind of screen capture.
Yeah, I'm hoping that I can try and put some work into it and make some of the stuff, you know, sort of basic, but kind of easy to put together. And if it's as easy as this, like of, you know, of just doing the podcast and doing it in the studio and having the audio and stuff running, yeah, it should be a good way to put together some good image editing pieces for something like Luminar. I was scanning around on YouTube, and there's really a pretty limited amount of good introductory videos for some of this stuff. There's some that the company itself has put out, and those are pretty good.
Oh,
but
yeah,
some of the stuff on the outside of it, just the photography and the advice and the direction of editing and stuff around Luminar or around Affinity. Some of the training tutorial videos I saw around it are just, they're kind of goofy, and you don't really see like what's going on. Or, you know, you just kind of end up with some kind of crazy image. It's just sort of some kind of quick.
Oh, sure. Not how to do real editing, but just if you crank this tool, this is the part that it's affecting.
That's what it seemed like they ended up showing. I understand the idea that like when you're screen capturing and trying to figure out how to make something artistic, it doesn't really go together so well. So you kind of have to do it like Martha Stewart a little bit and have the two ovens going at the same time. So as soon as you put the pie in the oven to bake, then you pull out the pie that's already cooked, right? Like, so you have to have a couple pieces already done in advance. But yeah, it was kind of funny watching some of this stuff. It just doesn't seem like it's really developed yet. So yeah, I want to try and put together some of the stuff around our cool photos, our outdoor photos.
Yeah, I think that's cool to get into.
Do some landscape tutorials or something. If I can figure out how to edit, it might be just good practice for me to learn how to edit some photographs. I don't really edit enough. I don't do enough retouching, you know, really practice my skill to like hone the craft of retouching. I don't know how it was for you, like doing a bunch of the wedding stuff. Like, it's a lot of retouching to do, but just like the advancement of like getting better at retouching, or, you know,
I feel like my retouching skills are something that have definitely improved. I think other kinds of editing that I want to get into, or just the more stylized way of putting, not in a gross way.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what I'm really thinking about, but I'm trying to just get more refined in how I'm putting my photos together. But retouching specifically, pretty good at. Those wedding photos are great practice.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm sure you get like a ton of practice in that. But I want to try more too. And that's why I'm messing around with Luminar. But really, there's so much I can do in Lightroom still. Or, you know, it's just kind of practicing, retouching, and kind of working toward doing a better job at putting the files together and making them nicer, going back over some of the old ones. And I want to try and do a little bit more to like rough draft photos. Or, you know, like, this is a rough draft of the edit. So I could go through in Lightroom.
Oh, sure. So you do like your first set of editing and then you...
Yeah, then I look at it, and then I should edit it, kind of redline it a little bit, you know, see like, oh, this is good, this is bad. Or I see this grading, this light doesn't look natural. So some of that sort of stuff is the thing I should work on.
Yeah, I noticed that that helps me a lot to go to like kind of come back to things a few times before they're done.
I'd like to try and do that a little bit more. I should try and take it more seriously, like the editing part. Editing and publishing part, I want to try and jump on more. It's winter time now. I got to put in more.
It's a good time for studio hours.
More studio hours is what
more
I got to do.
Editing time.
Way more editing time.
So for the Luminar stuff that you have gotten to do, how is its editing compared to Lightroom? like for the parts of it that would be similar or comparable tools? Like, do you notice one seeming like it's better? Or do you notice what, like, is Lightroom still just the best thing that there is?
Yeah, an old version of Lightroom is still the best that there is. Yeah, an old version of Lightroom, I think, is. It's really what it feels like right now. I mean, apparently there's some stuff in 2018 that's supposed to handle more, like, of the...
I'm sure there'll be a bunch of stuff coming out.
Yeah, it's the digital asset management part that's not really built yet.
Sure.
And that's the thing that's going to be built, I guess, in 2018 coming out by some of these software companies.
Yeah.
And that's when we're going to be able to see, like, which one might be better. But really, as it stands right now, it still seems like Lightroom.
How about for like the actual photo editing part, though, or what you're able to do?
Yeah,
with the editing of an image, not so much organization of photos.
That's a big part of it. And going through there, there's interesting stuff that you can do.
I know it's a new tool to learn, also. So there's probably an amount of just getting used to it.
There's that part too. You know, when in 1992, 93, when Photoshop first came out, you see the art from that, the photography art from then, and it was just like these insane rasterized images that didn't make any sense.
Some pretty freaky pictures.
Yeah, it was just like all the colors were like transposed into like these weird, super hard, like greens and reds and yellows.
I remember lots of yellows.
It was just if you cranked everything to one side, and it was just like, we got it. Look at that. But it was just because they didn't know what to do with it yet, so they did the most with it.
Sure, yeah.
And it was bad. And then like since then they like pulled back a lot, and so now like it looks like real life, or they're building something digital to look real. You know, it's like the artistic part of it's back, where you're just using the same thing to try and lay in the same type of artistic principles that you would anywhere else. So part of that is to say, in the same way as we're coming into these new tools and people are learning these new tools, like HDR was back in 2007, it's like too hard sometimes. So similarly with some of this stuff, it's a little bit too hard on the editing side. And I noticed that with Lightroom for years, like, you know, when Lightroom came out, and with my own photos, when I'd edit them, there's a little too much pressure, like a little too much gain or something on the signal. Like it was just about to break up. That's what it felt like sometimes. So I don't know. That's just sort of like the immaturity of the photographer, myself in this case, and kind of how to understand how to use the tools. But as it goes, the final answer of it is that any of these tools can really result in the same outcome of great work, you know, like what you would know too. It's like it's just the artistic side of learning how to use some of these really basic tools to make more simple and refined adjustments to some spots that make the image a little bit more powerful, like trying to do basic stuff like crop or color correction or like a little bit of tone curve stuff, you know, like make it brighter, make it a little bit more contrasty. That's sure. about all you can really do, I think. There's different layers and there's different heavy amounts of presets and hue grading, like whatever that stuff is, of the forest photos with no green. There's that, I guess, that you can add. But I really think that like a lot of it should be pretty slight adjustments that are there to try and like add to the photo in some way. And I think that those you can do in any of these softwares, you know, in any control panel of adjustments on the side. You can export to anything that like would work pretty well. But in the same way, it's just like a new flavor of a thing to do, or it's a new workflow that kind of breaks up some of the old crusty habits that I've had in the past.
Yeah.
Like that's how it is with Lightroom, trying to go from Lightroom to Luminar, or, you know, and just messing with it. Capture One, not a chance. It was way too complicated, way too kludgy of an interface system there. Maybe for a pro that was really into that system, they could do it. I'm not required to. I'm not tied down to it at all. So it just seemed like this would be a waste of time ultimately for me to like really put a ton of pressure into if it's really not a more productive tool for me to get something done.
Yeah.
You follow what I mean? Like, yeah. It's like, this just seems like hard and complicated.
Yeah. Not necessary.
Yeah.
To get to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a little bit. I don't have a Capture One, or I don't have the Phase One medium format camera. You know,
yeah.
If I got some insane camera dropped off, I guess I'd try and mess with that software more, you know, because it's like proprietary to it. But yeah. Outside of that, you know, no, I don't need it. And I didn't buy the pro software either. So I guess, you know, the decision was made for me. As it goes, though, with using like Lightroom and Luminar, I don't know, the editing stuff, it works really well. I've been digging the Luminar stuff because it's a little bit of a way to break up some of the editing choices that I was making in Final Cut in Lightroom continually. And so changing that part up has been a good way to do stuff. Like, I like the photograph that I put together, the Alvord Desert over here, from one of the raw files that we shot out in the Alvord with the A7R. And it was like, you know, during sunset, and I was able to kind of pull in some of the warmth. The original photo was kind of great. You remember the day out there. The Alvord was a little bit gray. It was a little low on color and low on warmth and stuff. Right. I was able to pull a lot of that back into to the raw file, you know, to the image when I was editing it. And I just like the way that some of it came out. So
I really like how that one came out. The colors look really nice and natural.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's well put together.
As photo editing software goes, it did fine. It works nicely. It comes together, you know, pretty well. So I was happy with that. But some of the batch editing stuff, it's got a long way to go. Some of the resizing stuff, it did fine. Or, you know, like just setting up kind of the export file, the export system of what you can do to the file on the way out. That's a little bit reduced from some of the bigger options that you have in Lightroom.
Lightroom has a ton of option variations to get into for exporting.
Yeah. So like the workflow that I have at work, like outside of an artistic workflow where you're trying to take a choice image and then make adjustments to it to make it its best and then export that as like a piece of art. Outside of that kind of workflow, like what I do on the production side of taking a few hundred stock photos of equipment and trying to process that, like batch process it and batch export it, this sort of software would just be no good because you kind of can do batch processing, but it's real clumsy. It's nothing like what you would really expect if you're trying to do it efficiently or, you know, properly. And that's kind of a tricky thing. So I don't know. We'll see like what they kind of develop over time. But like, I would never want to switch over from Lightroom to something like this if I were trying to do batch processing and exporting of all the production work that I do. It would never work as that. You know, like, because like to grab 30 photos and then export those and have the export resize all 30 of those to whatever long width of it and whatever file type into whatever directory of a folder. I don't have the option to do that in some of the Luminar stuff. I can like edit the photo, sort of like you were talking about, like edit the photo in Photoshop, make some adjustments, but not really any healing brush adjustments. You can kind of get by with healing brush, but like the healing brush stuff, it works way better in Photoshop, like the content aware healing, way more effective than probably, I mean, like it's just Adobe. They've been doing it for 30 years trying to figure out how to do that technology. And they're way better than probably anybody at the algorithm that does the cloning tool stuff. I'm amazed at like some of the stuff they can do. So you can kind of get by in Luminar if you need to like clone something out, but it's still a little tough. It's like it's still a little patchy.
Yeah. I remember like the cloning out tool that Lightroom has, or that like really basic one. Like just started being good.
Yeah.
Not that long ago.
Exactly. Yeah. It was bad.
It was really bad. I remember it being frustrating.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
I always had to use Photoshop.
I always had to bring it into Photoshop. Yeah, one time just to do a little bit of work.
Touch up piece. Yeah, just some little tiny things. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I totally forgot about that. My workflow is completely different now. I really just only use Lightroom.
Yeah.
I did a lot of basic, but like necessary like retouching and stuff for wedding photos.
Yeah.
And just like stuff on skin and stuff or like things in the background. And really like it gets the textures of things and the colors or like the shading just in the patch.
Yeah.
So well now. It's really impressive. Like you can do so much with retouching just in Lightroom now. I had a friend who was a makeup artist and I used to help him with photo shoots for his projects. And I would do a lot of retouching for those shots afterwards. And I always had to take them into Photoshop because Lightroom couldn't do like just little basic skin retouching things.
Wow. Yeah, I remember
not
that too.
Not in a good way.
I know. I could never do it. And yeah, it's gotten much, much better. Like the healing brush tool has gotten much better. So I'm sure it's probably better even still in like the more advanced versions than the few years old version of Lightroom that we're running right now. And I hear that there's other tools. Like I hear Pixelmator is really quite good for the healing system like that. And I hear, what was the other one? I don't know. I think maybe it's Pixel. It might be Pixelmator, but I hear that that's, or maybe it's Affinity, but one of those softwares is the one to use for like your 3D images. Like if you're getting like 3D photos or something, you have one of those, the 360 degree cameras.
Oh yeah.
Where you're recording like a spherical image.
Yeah. And you like stitch it.
Yeah. I guess you can stitch it in this program and then you can do some of the healing brush stuff around like the base of it where the camera is.
Oh.
Like, you know, like a 360, like say you were to look around, you can look up, like, but straight up, there's going to be like a dot. It's going to be like a gray dot where there's no data. And then like straight down, there's going to be the same thing where some of the data's come together. And so I guess like this is the software that works even better than Photoshop right now to work on these 360 image environments where you can go through and like pull the image around and then use the healing brush on one of those spots and then have it close that out. And then you can render that out as a 360 like file to what, I don't even know what file type that is. And then and then edit it from, or you know, work on it and use it from there. But that's how like they're producing some of these files.
Interesting. That's cool.
I want to try and learn a little bit about that. Like, and also like and how that 360 stuff relates to the stock photography market. I was looking at that a little bit. Like when you look at iStock Photo or Storyblocks, which takes like video and audio and photo. And then there's like Pond5. There's a handful of other like stock photo systems out there, but a lot of the stock photography sites, they're talking about a need for these 360 environments for like people that are doing VR development, that sort of thing. So they need these stock files to build their VR environments with like good produced or, you know, well-produced 360 images. I was trying to figure out like,
interesting.
Yeah. I'm trying to think like, I wonder how like we could do that sort of on the side of doing other landscape stuff, but you know, go out to places and then get like 360 footage and then edit, or, you know, like do just like some of the simple production stuff of it and then put it up on some of these stock sites where it's like in need to get this type of 360 content.
Yeah.
Where there's already so much of a flood of landscape work in stock as it goes.
Huge amount.
Yeah. So we like that, but I'm trying to think of like content and media work that's sort of around, like maybe we're not going to get paid for landscape photos for a little bit. So, but maybe we can make stock 360 photos and make a little bit of money. Cause there's not enough of those right now. And then use that as an excuse to go on trips out to Eastern Oregon and make photos of Fort Rock or, you know, somewhere cool in Lake County, but we're making some 360 photos or some 360 content or something like that. That's that, you know, goes up on one of these stock sites, but it's just kind of a fun side idea. Something we can try in the springtime, maybe.
That's interesting. I didn't know that was a part of the stock photography need now.
It seems like it's coming into a lot of stuff around VR.
Yeah. VR is really big.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of stuff around VR and a lot of drone footage is in demand.
I'm super into the drone stuff. I want a drone really badly this next year.
We should try and get an inexpensive drone. We should try and take it to some spots to get some good basic stock footage of some good stuff outside. Yeah. Like the places that we go, you know, all that stuff would be great to get 360 and like aerial drone stuff. But, you know, like that's what I was thinking. It's like, man, I bet we could run a business really if we just try to book ourselves to do like even just stock trips to do like footage. 360 and aerial drone footage that goes up on the stock sites as we like populated it in like a pretty significant effort to produce. But you know, like one of the trips we made or something like that.
Yeah.
If we did that 2 or 3 days a week, wherever we were going, you know, and like we took off to, you know, somewhere and, you know, worked out of a hotel for a couple of days and made some aerial shots and some 360 shots sort of a thing. And then edited them and put them up from, you know, whatever area. We'd probably be like some of the first people to make 360 and aerial content of a lot of these outdoor places.
That'd be so cool. I'm really into that.
Yeah.
I think the 360 stuff is a cool idea.
Yeah.
And I've been on board for the drone stuff.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, we need a couple grand. Awesome. we need some bucks.
Oh man.
Yeah. But I really want to try and do that. Yeah. I was thinking like, wow, yeah, we probably make some of the first, especially under the scope of being like cinematography. Mm-hmm. Like there's probably a handful of things that are going up, but it's probably not as much like shot or, you know, like a photography level.
Yeah.
Work. And I think that we could probably excel in that pretty quickly if we were jumping in there. But first, we should get our toes wet. And this winter, we should try and put up like a portfolio of at least 100 of our images and try and go through and like learn about it, like put up the photos into a stock library, try and tag them and title them and get them like in there, get our account going, get it figured out. You know what I mean?
Get familiar with how their system works.
Yeah. And then see like, oh, yeah, okay, this is the sort of stuff that we're seeing in 360 video right now. But I know it's probably going to be maybe not a fat. I think it's really going to be like something content related to virtual reality. Virtual reality is going to be really necessary. And that could be static photos like it's been. It could be like 360 video. It could be a lot of different things, but it's kind of interesting that it's just like a new thing that's sort of opening up. So we should try it. It'd be fun. There's probably like a need for it somewhere on the West Coast. And I don't know. Maybe we can get paid for it someday.
That'd be cool.
We'll be so on the edge, Marina. That's what we got to do. We got to be on the cutting edge.
Cutting edge of VR.
Ooh.
Stock photography. I'm in. That sounds cool.
We can put it on our resume, Marina, that we're VR content developers.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Sounds great.
Yeah, it's a good... Hey, it's going to be real, Marina.
It's all right.
The yokels around here, they don't know, but we know.
Oh my gosh, I know.
We know, Marina.
We got to stay ahead.
We got to stay ahead. We got to do it. But I think that's probably everything I got going on for this episode of the podcast. What about you, Marina?
I think that wraps it up pretty well.
Thanks a lot for checking out this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast. Hope you guys check out some stuff on billynewmanphoto.com. Few new things up there, some stuff on the homepage, some good links to other outbound sources, some links to books, some links to some podcasts, links to some blog posts, all pretty cool. But yeah, check it out at billynewmanphoto.com. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of the podcast. Talk to you next time.